As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily. The challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning. The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves. This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. We have a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. Deshaies, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thought, Love, and Reflection, here today with you on a special show related to our children, education, and the importance of us supporting teachers and students. And we want to just make sure that everyone that's in the sound of my voice is prepared and ready to assist our children in reaching their highest heights by helping them to understand the importance and values of a good education. So we're here with this back to school telethon in order to help supply them with the need things that they need in order to be successful. And I just appreciate all of your support, and I look forward to having this conversation today. I have Princess with us, as well as Regina, to just reinforce our need and desire to give all the support we can to our students. Welcome, Princess and Regina. How are you all doing today? And we just want to start out by getting everybody's complete understanding related to why we need to do this and support our kids and our instructors. Princess?
Thank you, James, for having me. I appreciate that. And, you know, this is all inspired by my mom, who was my first educator. And then the last educator I saw as I left the sixth grade. And she, I thought I got out of there. And then she ended up being my middle school principal, assistant principal. So I didn't get out of there. So I just wanted to recognize that it's important to have supplies for our teachers as well as our students. And our teachers are shelling out a lot of their own personal income to provide for students snacks, copies of different, you know, tests, to, you know, get them some home. Just, you know, the teachers are, and even to paint their own room to make it more cheery, the teachers have to paint that at their own home. And so I thought it necessary to do this telethon and to tag a teacher in the Midlands and give her whatever proceeds we have and continue this next year. We have to show our educators that we value them and we value what they're doing. And what they are doing is a lot of times they're raising our kids, you know, from 7:30 to 3:45. And they're laying a foundation of so many different things and enlightening them on so many different avenues. I thought it was time that we show some responsibility and just, you know, and highlight what they need and highlight their importance in the development of the next generation. And I'm going to give it on over to Regina from there, but I am the entire show with you.
Hello, Regina, and you being still on the front line working to make life better for our students. So very few people know more than you how important it is to supply our teachers with the right materials and have the students have the right materials in order to be successful.
Hi, James. Yes, I am charged with, here in South Carolina, I'm charged the responsibility of ensuring that our teachers have what it takes to create literacy-rich environments. Among some of the things that the teachers need are books. And I know people who are listening, first we need to have what's called a paradigm shift, meaning we need to have a shifting of the mindset. I know a lot of people are thinking, well, the schools buy all of this stuff for the teachers. Those children don't need anything. When I was in school, well, that was, I'll say for me, that statement means that it was more than 30 years ago, probably going into almost into 40 years ago since I sat in a classroom. And the thinking was so different. Teachers did not have to compete with your computers at home or with the latest gadget, the walking around with the cell phone actually on your wrist. We today, as educators, have to compete with electronics. We have to compete with things that are going on television. And we have to be able to hold these children's attention. That's one aspect of why the need is so great. We need to have computers, desktop, laptop. We also, and something that's near and dear to my heart, James, is being able to have our classrooms such that special needs children are able to enter into those classrooms and work in there in order to prepare children and the general education children to work in the, you know, the general population, because people are going now toward group work. You have to be inclusive. So whatever you need to be inclusive, we need to make sure that it's there in the classroom.
I you know, as I think back, and I just retired a couple of years ago, and I think back and try to understand how our students are faring in this environment where you have school systems trying to give students computers, and so that they will have all their information at the tip of their hands. But I also realize there are schools who are unable to even give children proper books or even provide them with books. And then you're talking about providing them with the writing material that they need and being able to help them when they're trying to do projects and all those kinds of things. So they're motivated to do more than just worksheets. And these things become difficult for them to obtain if they don't have the proper people supporting them and providing them with the materials. And everybody is not at the same place at the same time. So we don't want any children to find or feel as though they cannot participate or contend with the other students who don't have those same issues.
And James, you know, there are areas in various states where some schools are not funded at the same level as other schools. So while a school that one person may have visited seem to have everything that they need crying out for just the basics of new textbooks or the accessories that go with the textbooks, so, such as access to the website to use, that the children can use in addition to using, you know, the textbooks that's given. And a lot of many people think that after a couple of the legislative, like Brown versus Board of Education, where, you know, they're talking about separate but equal, after those cases, you still have places. Right here, we have the corridor of shame. They're still fighting to get equal funding for their schools. That is so amazing that in this day and time, this is still going on.
Well, it seems to be going on just as we are dealing with what seems to be a push back toward our rights being taken away, that our students are still suffering from the ability not to be able to compete because of lack of funding in their schools. And that should not be something that our students on the forefront of their educations should be dealing with, because it is just my belief that they're supposed to have the support not only of their parents, but their communities, their cities, their state, and their country, because them faring well is to assure that our country will fare well when they become adults.
And you know what? You've just said a mouthful, because schools are moving more towards community learning, group work, because in the workplace, people are project-based. So schools are doing a lot of project-based learning also. And that's preparing the students to be able to compete in the workforce of the 21st century. It's 21st century learning. But unfortunately, the funding is still back in the 19th century. Two do not equate. Also, the working of people with disabilities or with different learning styles, you're going to have those people in the workforce working on projects, because people are coming to various workforces from all across the United States. It's important that our school districts make it a point to teach our children according to the way they're going to be working when they get out there into the work, you know, into the work field.
I just feel like we have too many of our leaders willing to spend our resources on things that don't give us back the profits that we need. They're so willing to spend so many of our resources on police departments and on jails and penitentiaries, but yet don't seem to understand the need to spend our resources on our most valued possession, which is the education of our children.
So, James, are you saying that we need to be more proactive than reactive?
I'm just saying that we need to reevaluate how we spend our resources and look to increase the amount of resources that is sent to our schools and for our children's education to assist them to be productive citizens, and not look to spend a lot of money on locking them up and spending more money per inmate than we spend on our students.
And James, you know, you may have more details on the statistics, but from what I've seen, so many of our inmates were not only in, well, many of our inmates fell under the special ed umbrella, or they were unidentified. It is my belief that if we spent more money toward adequately training or working with this population, then we would have to spend less money within the prison system. And by that, I mean there are certain things that teachers within their classroom to help a child that may have ADHD and bouncing all around. Mind you, the listeners who are listening, I want them to understand that we're in a totally different society now. You can't just beat them and make them sit down. You can't speak harshly to them and make them sit down, because as little as is known, that can be deemed as verbal corporal punishment if the wrong person hears it or if the right person hears it. So you need mechanisms within the classroom. If you have that child that bounces all around, you need a ball or a particular type of chair that gives that child enough wiggle room to move around within his space. And James, I'm telling you, I know people are saying we didn't have that when we were in school and we turned out okay. Well, as you can see, many people are not turning out okay. So as times change, we have to change with the times, and we have to fund education so that we can change with the times.
Regina, are we recognizing, I apologize if I interrupt you, are we recognizing, though, James and Regina, that this understanding of a certain element of our children and our culture, and they're being dismissed as belligerent or animalistic or slow learning because they just don't want to deal with or try to understand them in order to teach them. And James, I want you to chime in because I know you've dealt with delinquents before, and maybe some of them could have been saved. But Regina, you first. I mean, is there a certain element in population that we're just dismissing as slow learning and we don't have time for them anyway?
Francis, I promise you, it's a little bit more than just dismissing. I would venture out to say that it has been said that a lot of it is strategic, because when you get these young people who are not doing well and they get discouraged, there's a term now called a push-out system, that the system is designed to push out certain people into society who will be pulled in to the prison system, which has become more privatized. That it is being created, that a whole prison population is being created from the school system. Now, if we know this, why are we not doing more to keep it from happening? Why are we not funding schools at the levels that they need to be funded? Why are we not training teachers how to deal with these types of students? Why are we expecting teachers to keep that 19th century knowledge in dealing with 21st century students? Why are we not sending these students over to vocational schools to teach them how to use their hands to lay bricks, to become mechanics, to fix computers? Why is this not happening? Why do we have to have a telethon?
Yeah. Because, I mean, this issue, you know, there's so much that you just said. But, you know, Ms. Harmon pointed out to me that sometimes the kids come in and they're just hungry. So she keeps snacks. She said they can't. Mm-hmm. They're not like us. You know, when they're hungry, they're hungry. And so she keeps snacks for them. And then she said she wants books that are on their level. Sometimes she has in her classroom those who are reading on the right level and those who are a couple levels behind and maybe one that's up. But she said if she gets a child in her room that is two levels behind in reading, they get discouraged when they hear the others or if they can't even get it. So she needs different levels. I didn't even think about that, Regina. But you are pointing out to me that systematic. And to me, that's worse than just dismissing.
Well, even when what Ms. Harmon pointed out is so true, but let me take it back. We have a lot of students who do not see the inside of a school until they are in the first grade. See, kindergarten is not mandatory, and preschool definitely isn't mandatory. And if
wait,
you
what?
Aren't,
kindergarten is not mandatory?
Mm-mm. No.
When did that happen? I didn't know
mm-mm.
that.
There are certain,
did you know that?
I've always been under the impression that preschool and kindergarten has been something that parents had an option in, And first grade was the only level at which it was mandatory.
Wow.
That is why a lot of our and parents, well, you know, parents don't know that it's not mandatory. That's why parents can actually keep their children home from kindergarten half a school year and nothing will be done to them because there are no laws mandating that. So if a child doesn't get in on the grade, on the bottom level of education, by the time they enter school, they should know 10,000 words. If a child is not in a print-rich, fluency-rich environment at home with the correct type of words, then they're already behind. So if you're entering 2 years behind, and then you
by the time a child enters first grade, they should have 10,000 words in their vocabulary.
By the time the child enters school, regardless of what level they enter school, we're basing it on preschool.
Mm-hmm.
By the
mm-hmm.
time that child comes to preschool, they should have 10,000 words in their vocabulary. Now, if that child did not come to preschool or if they did not meet the cutoff, if the parents didn't register them in time and they're sitting at home or they're in a nursery with a play environment as opposed to an academic environment, when they get into the schools, they're going to be behind. So now if they're behind, by the time they get to Ms. Harmon's class, they're 2-3 levels back. So that's why she needs books that are on their level, that they're going to have confidence in reading. Because the more confidence they have in reading, the more they'll want to read, and the more they will push their levels up. So they don't stay at that level, but it's where they're comfortable and they build their confidence. And they move on higher. That's why she needs books on various levels. So to not discourage those children who are not on grade level.
And no country can really thrive when there's 20 to 30% of their population is not productive. I mean, when you think about the selfish reason for making sure that all of our children are educated, because we want our children to be taxpayers and not tax burdens. And if we don't seek to educate them when they're young, then they will not benefit us as productive citizens when they become older. We have to make them understand the importance of getting up in the morning and make something happening positive in your life each and every day. And so we do that by encouraging them to educate themselves. And we have to recognize that every parent who has a child is not going to understand the value and the importance of educating that child. So we need to seek to do that as a community. The first level of support has to be the community. So if you see a child in your community not thriving, then we need to give aid to that child or seek to find someone that can if we want to see these children be productive.
And not only that, James, if you see a child, if you're in Family Dollar, the grocery store. This back to the community, you know, right, it takes a village. Ask, well, why is this child not in school? Well, I didn't. Let's help to take away the barriers for children not being in school. Take away these excuses. Because it's only going to hurt our society in the long run.
Regina, I just want to know, and I think I already know my heart, have you come upon a child and the parent in Publix, Kroger's, at Family Dollar, Dollar General on a school day, and they're not in school? Have you said, why is this child not in school?
Princess, not only have I said, why is this child not in school?
Amen.
And they said, and Lord, I don't no telling who's listening, but I made a way for that child to get to school. The parent said, well, we didn't make the deadline. And when I started talking to the child, and I noticed that they did not have a level of comprehension, they could not speak to me in complete sentences. And the child was school age. Ma'am, this child needs to be in school. I tell you what, you bring that child to me. And although I was not able to get that child in the public school, I was able to get that child in a private school setting that was educational and not educational, but it was academic-based, learn by play. There's a difference.
Yes, yes.
So that child did get to school on scholarship because the school was expensive, but I got the child there on scholarship.
James, can you talk to someone about what she said, that this may be a systematic approach rather than a dismissal of a certain element of our culture and our population? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you see? Because I'm inclined to agree with her.
Well, I see a need to put in place a way to deal with children individually without them having a negative effect on a individual's classroom. Like, there's some people, whether we want to believe it or not, who are not suited for a classroom of 30 people, who need a little bit more individual attention so that they don't get lost in a classroom of 30 students. In most cases, when schools have classrooms of 30 to 40 to 50 students, that's because they don't want to pay for the additional teachers needed to reduce those class numbers. And when you have students acting out, they need to be in an environment where they can get the necessary counseling so that they can recognize that their behavior is keeping them from being in a academically rich environment. When I spent a lot of time at the jail, when I was educating students who were 18 and 19 and 20, many of these students were unable to sit still and were deterrents to the academic environment when they were 10, 11, and 12. Now faced with being in this confinement area, they now seek to the education that they were given the opportunity to have earlier. But had they had an opportunity to be with someone who could mentor them and help them to understand why they needed to act differently in that classroom environment, maybe we could have altered their behavior so they wouldn't have had to have gone to a jail in order to recognize the importance of education.
Amen. Regina, a couple of things. First, you spoke of the Chromebooks, and that we are, that most children I know here in Richland County, Lexington County, are sent home with Chromebooks. But speak to the fact that they may be sent to a home that doesn't have Wi-Fi, so they may have the Chromebooks. But you see them sitting in the Publix parking lot, you know, at Hill's Barbershop in the parking lot, any place, McDonald's, wherever they can get Wi-Fi to do their homework. You know, talk about how difficult that is, and then talk about how difficult it is to compete with the technology of the world. And we see some teachers resorting to rapid, you know, the education or making it so interesting, you know, with technology. But I want to hear first about Wi-Fi. I see so many students searching for Wi-Fi. They got the tools, but they don't have any Wi-Fi at home.
But look, let me share this. Not only do you have some students searching for Wi-Fi, but you have some teachers searching for Wi-Fi. You have some educators who actually stay at work very, very late in the evenings because they don't want to afford the internet bill, or they cannot afford the internet bill. So you may see them at Panera, you may see them at McDonald's, doing work on their computers. I have heard that plans were in the making you're the techie person, have some sort of overarching access to Wi-Fi in various areas.
That the Wi-Fi signal is at its peak, and that it is a strong signal. You know, there are some areas where Wi-Fi is hard to get anyway. You can go in certain parts of South Carolina, and I can just say one right now, Hemingway or Georgetown, or there's several other places, Lake City, South Carolina. If you get too far in the rural area, Elgin, you know, the signal gets very faint. So in some of just besides it being Richland County and Harbison and Tapin, where the signal is very strong, and those, we know what kind of neighborhoods, Irmo, we know what kind of neighborhoods those are, they're trying to make that signal accessible to everybody. Sometimes you get so many people on it, and then everybody gets locked out, or it gets very slow. So I understand what you're saying.
Well, seemingly to me, there can be a desire to acquire that part of the internet that is for education and only education at a lower rate or at a zero rate than that part of the internet that is for entertainment. Like, and I don't know if that's possible or not, but seemingly to me, if you're trying to get on the internet because you want Netflix and you want Hulu and you want all access to all that, then that need to be something that you're paying for. But if you are just seeking to do research and to do education, that there should be a way to give you that access without charging you very much or charging you very little. I don't know if it can be reduced to that.
I think Wi-Fi should be free for teachers.
But it should be.
Yeah. If you're an educator and you are, I don't know how national or well-known the NEA is, but I think if you are a teacher in this country, you should be issued a device, Wi-Fi device, a pocket Wi-Fi device, one strong enough that you can bring with you in your house, wherever, and it is what you use, and the state or the county pays for it. I think that's crazy. You know, I was just worried about the students, but now Regina is enlightening me and says, hey, there are some teachers who, you know, for whatever reason are choosing not to put that in their budget, and they stay at work long enough to do that. To me, that's crazy. Isn't it, James?
Well, I certainly recognize that when you have, I seek everything I can do to reduce my overall expenses, and I've taken my cable bill from $200-some down to $67, and all I'm purchasing now is the internet, and I'm seeking other ways to get the other things that I need, so I can understand somebody not necessarily wanting to, having a difference of opinion of what is the most important thing in their expense list. And so, we have to decide on that, and so I understand why teachers may have some thoughts related to what it is that they're going to purchase based on where they're from and how much they're being paid. And we are not across the country, we're not actually paying our teachers what it is they should be making. When you think about the fact that a lot of teachers find themselves have to work a second job, no teacher should be working a second job because they're not making the minimum necessary to live off of. Now, you know, of course, there are always going to be people who want to have more, but at least they ought to be making enough that they can live minimally, and certainly different places require different expenses.
Now, James, that's very important. Regina, and I know you want to chime in on something else, go ahead, but also the teacher's salary needs to be valued more, and there needs to be more of it. And I'd love for you to talk about that. That's a key point there. We need to pay our teachers more.
Well, going back to, and I'm thanking you all for the ideas that I'm getting. I do know, as far as the Chromebooks going home, as I said, a lot of children do not have, you know, Wi-Fi, but what can happen is programs can be uploaded to the devices so that the students can use the devices at home. Now, when the devices go home to homes that do not value education,
mm-hmm.
Pookie, Bebe, anybody can grab that computer and keep it from the child that it was sent home, that who's supposed to be using it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an issue that's run into many times with the computers. But also, if you're on government assistance, you can actually receive Wi-Fi, it's either free or reduced. I know if you receive food stamps,
mm-hmm.
it's offered either free or reduced, greatly reduced mm-hmm. price. I believe it's free. You know, just if you're on food stamps,
mm-hmm.
you don't even have to get the other, you know, the checks and everything. So, you know, that's out there. That's available. As far as teacher salaries, because salaries are not equitable with, you know, even with the Southeast region salary,
mm-hmm.
I think it is deplorable that teachers are expected or have pay out of their salary for additional things in the classroom. Now, people who are listening, especially in South Carolina, will say, well, they get a certain amount of money from the state for classroom supplies. It is nowhere near what they need. Nowhere near. In my opinion, if you want a literacy-rich environment, then have those teachers to come into the office with the books that they, the supply catalogs, and let them purchase what they need for their classroom. Give them a blank check and let them fix that classroom up the way you're expecting it to look.
Mm-hmm.
You will then get that environment that you want. But don't expect and inspect, apply what the teachers need to make it look or make it operate the way you expect it to operate.
Yeah.
So you know, their salary, I just think it's so unfair. That from that salary, oh, well, you need to have Wi-Fi so you can grade these papers at home when you get home. Because, see, you're doing such a fabulous job in the classrooms during the day and teaching from bell to bell. You don't have time to do that checking of the papers and doing entering things into the computers at school. So you need to do it at home. But now to do it at home, got to have Wi-Fi. Well, you don't make enough to buy Wi-Fi? Oh, really? So then it's such a circle, and I see
yeah.
it, but you're at such a great risk when you expose the circle.
Wow, you just said a mouthful. I'm going to have to
keep their mouths closed.
I'm going to need to move on to the last show for the telethon. James, I really appreciate what you're doing in order to have Regina on to discuss this. Regina, there was one last thing I wanted to ask you, and I've forgotten now. Gosh, I don't know where I was going with that conversation, but there was one more important thing, and I've forgotten, but continue the conversation. I need to move on to Minister Sanders, the Empowerment Hour, the last hour of the telethon. Regina, your world on education next year, I really want to do more with this, and I had a conversation today at church with Percy Mack. We really want to make this a big deal next year as far as what we are doing for our teachers is, you know, we need a list for them too, and we need to do more for them. I appreciate you and what you've done in education. Okay.
And you had a conversation with one of the right people. He is such a staunch advocate for education.
Yes.
He was a former superintendent, a wonderful man.
Mm-hmm.
So
a wonderful man. Yeah, a wonderful man. James, thank you for everything.
As we continue, Regina, just know that, you know, when we talk about limitations, there are principals out there limiting the amount of copies that teachers can make. I mean, you know, it is amazing at this day and time, we're telling them, you know, we're limiting the number of copies a teacher makes, but we want them to work from bell to bell and to sit up and understand. Nobody wants to listen to a teacher talk for 60 minutes each and every day. And so, and then you're limiting the amount of material that she can provide those students to work is just ridiculous.
Well, James, you know, that's a conversation that you and I can have that goes into having students do authentic work, having them do more project-based work, and not just putting a worksheet. And so it's getting them to be more creative with their minds. And so there's a reason for that. But also I understand what you're saying, and I understand the stress that's imposed upon the teacher as a result of that.
But even if you're doing projects, and I understand that, I mean, outstandingly, if you have a project that you want a child to work on, you have to assist them with a certain amount of instruction on that project and materials needed. So in essence, if a project-rich environment may be even more costly than one where
right.
a teacher is providing worksheets. So if
right.
you just
exactly.
keep them from making copies, you can stop them from making copies, but if you're going to go to a project environment, they got to have materials to make the project, create a good project.
You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. You just hit it on the head, and you just hit on the nail on the head, the reason for this telethon. Because they're expecting, but they're not providing.
And that always seems to be the case, that they sit up there in these environments, making all these brilliant decisions, but yet don't send the money down to make that stuff work. You know, and when you hear a man say, it sounds good, we want our teachers standing up and teaching from bell to bell. That sounds good, but you have to ask yourself all these different ways that students learn, whether or not the students are prepared to let, you know, that is something people do in college, teachers do in college without any problem, because students pay to go to college. They pay to get the knowledge that those instructors know. So we were prepared to listen to our college instructor talk for an hour and a half, 2 hours. That is
not necessarily
the place that students are.
Here in South Carolina, we're doing a lot of work with Lucy Calkins and the Teachers College out of New York at Columbia University. And
mm-hmm.
with that, you have various types of work, not at all with the teacher. The teacher only is up there 15 minutes at the most. And then it's the I do, we do, you do method. So
right.
they're wanting the children to be authentic. working in small groups, working individually, and, you know, the teacher giving them that guidance, the teaching point, and then they move forward with doing their work independently. So there's a method to it, and the way the classroom needs to be set up is what takes so much. It takes a lot of money to have these classrooms set up effectively for the teacher. Right there could be a whole project. That's a whole nother business. People
right.
are making money going in, setting up these classrooms for effective teaching. And it's worked. It's increased test scores. It's proven to work. So if you have something that's proven to work, put the money behind it.
And don't wait to educate the children. They educate the teacher on how that is done after they get into classroom. Those kind of things should be focused on while they're college students looking to be teachers. You know, and I used to tell my principal in my office time, listen, I'm not an entertainer. I'm here to teach math. Now, I didn't learn or go to college and learn how to make math entertaining. You know, I just, that's not the way they taught it us. So I'm afraid you can't make me an entertainer when I didn't have no course in entertainment. You know what I'm saying? You know, I had one principal evaluate me and suggest, your class was boring. I'm teaching algebra. Now, I didn't learn. I know that there's some teachers turn their classroom into rap when they're teaching algebra, but I didn't learn how to do that. I'm teaching the X's and the Y's and the combinations of those two variables and other variables, and I'm trying to teach them the basics. Sometimes education is not a choir or a musical, okay? We can't make everything that you need to learn a musical. Every teacher is not qualified to do that. But if that's what you want, then you need to make that a part of the curriculum on the college level so that they're prepared to give you more of what more of what you want.
That's what I've seen a lot of our colleges here starting to do. They haven't done it enough yet because we still get new teachers who are totally lost. Totally. But we're starting to do that more. The colleges are learning the reading writers workshop method. They even have math workshop now, making it more entertaining because you've got, as I said, you have to compete with all of this technology. So, yes, it is going to be boring. And if you haven't been trained in college how to integrate excitement, you're not going to know it that first day when those children hit that door. And it's going to be a downhill experience for the teacher from that point.
Yeah, I can tell you I never had a class in college that suggested to me how to make learning exciting. How we learned all the math education, all the things we need to know about the subject area we were teaching. None of the courses was, education excitement. I'm sorry, I don't remember that. And certainly if that's what we want, then we have to give new teachers a fighting chance to be able to submit that either through education in college or through workshops at the school. You have to provide them with what it is you feel would make the education environment more successful.
James, I was never taught how to teach reading. I was taught the theory, but how do I use the theory to teach these children how to read from left to right? How do I know if they're having a reading issue? I was never taught that. So when I went in school, first year teacher, it was trial and error.
Yeah.
And I can promise you, even just this past year, I just learned what the theory was behind what some of the things I did, which were successful. But I didn't know why they were successful. Took a class. Reading poetry, rhythm, rhyme, repetition, fluency. I didn't know why. Only thing I knew about teaching my children poetry was that an old teacher told me, if you want your children to learn, teach them some poems. So I did, and they learned. But I didn't know why. And it wasn't until I got into graduate level classes that I learned those things. There's something wrong with how we educate teachers.
And we definitely need to give them the tools to do the job if we want to evaluate them on how they're doing the job. You can't tell them, you know, go find your own tools if you want to evaluate them to a certain level based on this new design you created.
I have a prime example that I'm not at liberty to share of how detrimental it is when you expect something out of a first-year teacher that has not been taught to that first-year teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a situation right now that's going on, and it's horrible because it's so discouraging.
And now when so many people are not giving their teachers tenure, a lot of these young teachers are at the mercy of whoever the principal is and what his evaluation is of their abilities or inabilities.
Now, James, I don't know. I'm not sure if I know what tenure. When do you receive tenure? We don't have that here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. In the state of Florida, used to receive tenure after 3 or 4 years of showing that we were performing at a certain level. And recently, our legislators took tenure away. So now students, teachers are at the mercy of their principal in regards to whether or not they're found competent for their courses. And so, you know, there can be a lot of personal, you know, thought processes related to whether or not you're doing your job right and whether or not are the environment you put in. You know, when you have instructors who are teaching high-level courses, they're going to have a different mentality in their classroom than a teacher who is working with students who are below level. And so you know that the person working below level is going to have a lot different type discipline problems than the teacher who is working with the higher level students.
Well, I venture to say that's more so the norm. But I will say that depending on that teacher's management style, you may not have any problems in your classroom regardless of what level the children are on. Not bragging, not at all bragging, but giving an illustration. Maybe out of 26 years, 2 referrals have I written.
Well, listen. Now, we know that you and I are different levels, and your ability to communicate how you want students to behave is different. So I mean, maybe you're right. I don't know. I ain't going to question you on that. But I would believe that I can tell you that most high school teachers, that ain't going to be the case, depending on what level students they're dealing with. So, you know, you can.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you can if I got through a day with not disciplining somebody or needing to chastise somebody, then then I would call that a good day. But to suggest that, and then you got the type of teacher. I was a very stringent teacher where I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't think it was right to let students go to the bathroom just because they raised their hand. I got the right to look. You got 3 bathroom passes in a 9-week period. If you use them all up, then you use them all up. You got to come to detention. You know, but some teachers would let them come and go out their classroom as they wanted. So, but
not
you know,
me.
The administrators would say, oh, you shouldn't let them out in the hallway. Don't let your students out in the hallway. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say it's okay for them to go to the bathroom as much as they want to, and you're going to say that they can't, then you want them to stay in the classroom. You can't have it both ways, you know. But some principals didn't, you know, you had teachers where the bathroom pass was right at the door. Just get up and walk and get the pass and walk out and go do whatever you want to do. Some of them were that lenient. I wasn't that lenient.
No, neither was I. My students couldn't even get up to sharpen their pencils without permission. It was a safety issue. It was a safety issue because if you walked across that room and some little joker decided to trip you and I didn't see it, but when you get permission from me, I know you're up and I can make sure nobody bothers you. Now, that worked very well for me. Because when I tell a parent, well, it's a safety issue. I don't want anybody to bother your child. The parent's going to be all on my side. Boy, you better sit your tail down in that classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know how to have a win-win situation.
Let me just say to you, there are a lot of teachers who know good management. I've seen a lot of young, small teachers who ran their classrooms like a boot camp. So it's not about your size. It's a lot about your attitude. It's a lot about how you interact with your students. But I always thought that it's important for students to have lines and to respect the lines that their teachers draw, so as they recognize that those lines are going to be in life. Sometimes parents try to protect their students too much, and that's one of the reasons why when they go outside of the classroom into the real world, they have difficulty following instructions.
And I'm going to raise my hand to that one because I was definitely that parent. And, you know, James, I don't mind ever sharing my story. I've got to learn to not share it so much so that I embarrass my child. But, oh, I was at bat for her every doggone day or any time. I couldn't go to bat for her on her job. We've got to let our children fall, so that they'll realize how to pick themselves up and try again. I get it.
Yeah, that's so important that we let them do that.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Because when they go into the environment thinking, well, I can fight back, you know, sometimes you have to recognize you don't have a voice until after you've had some success on your job. And if you can't get to that point, but you're going to tell your boss what to do, he's going to feel you're not needed.
I had to do it, James. I had to do it. Well, I'm glad that you had us on today for the telethon, and will we see you at 8 o'clock?
Yes, we will. Well, let me just ask you, how did the storm affect the school? Were you out this week, or were you in school this week, or do you start on Monday?
We were out one day because we had an influx of residents from Florida and Georgia, and some of our schools were used for for shelter. And so we were out Monday. The children came back 2 hours later. Well, no, everybody went back in 2 hours later Tuesday. And Wednesday we were back doing what we do best, educating the children. Now, I'm understanding it. I was in a very intense workshop session this weekend, so I'm really out of the loop. But I'm looking and I see the word Maria. I don't know where Maria is headed. Keep hearing Maria is getting stronger. So I guess I need to go and look and see where Maria is churning. Have you heard of Hurricane Maria?
No, I haven't. So I guess I better get on God, too. I just hope that we don't have anything else coming this way.
I want to know, how did you fare?
I lost a tree. I lost a lot of the shade. A lot of limbs were broken. But there was no physical damage done to the house that I recognize right now. But it was, we were out of electricity almost immediately. So that was a interesting thing that we lost power immediately, and we were out of power for two and a half days.
So did you have enough of your electronics charged to keep your power going?
No, I didn't. I'm afraid that I'm going to have to, in the future, boot some things up, but I guess it really wouldn't matter because I lost internet power right away. So I don't know if there was anything I could have done to make my computers useful without the internet. Did you lose any power?
Uh-uh.
So did the storm even make it to South Carolina?
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. We had very high wind. We had damage. A lot of our trees, because the rain was just steady and the ground was soggy, a lot of our heavy, older trees just fell over, toppled over into houses, into apartment complexes because the ground was so soggy. And you know, a lot of us, and I'll say us, have PTSD symptoms during storms like that because of our historic storm in 2015. So some people get really sick, really anxious. The anxiety is so high.
Okay. Well, Regina, what are your final thoughts for this evening? You know, we have another show at 8 p.m. thoughts, our normal regular time. But what are your final thoughts for this evening as we wind down and want to, what do we want to say to our parents and our educators, administrators and our elected officials about how we want them to act and appreciate education and our students' needs?
I want our parents to be gentle and kind to our teachers. I want our legislators to be empathetic and knowledgeable about the inner workings of classrooms. And I want our teachers to be strong and resilient and keep pushing forward and knowing that the work that you are doing is not in vain and it is so appreciated.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Regina. I think that our teachers are on the front line, that our teachers are the people who help to keep our countries going and are responsible for educating the masses, and that we just don't see the role they play in the overall existence of our society, and that we need to give them more support to do their jobs and to do it at the highest level, but just requiring that they do it at the highest level without giving them the support is not going to help us overall.
James, I'd also like to say to our legislators that as you read the legislative paperwork, understand and go to bat for teachers, because if it had not been for a teacher, you would not be able to be in that position that you have right now.
And that seems to be what is so absent. And they think that they can really sacrifice the budgets of education because people will do it anyway. And that is the last place they need to seek to balance the budget on, is that they need to give even more money to education instead of seeking to reduce it to its lowest amount, hoping that it'll work anyway.
It won't, especially when so many other occupations are looking to hire teachers at double the salary that the education system is paying because of the skill set. Teachers are multitaskers. They get the job done. They do little with nothing. They do a lot with little. And a lot of corporations are looking for people with those types of skills.
Good. You're so right. And I look forward to with us working toward next year, making this a priority, because our kids have to become a priority. And that's the bottom line. If our children aren't looked at as a priority, we will continue to fail them.
So we just encourage people to go to the Never Had It So Good sports media website and hit the donate button and donate.
We have to show our support.
Thank you for what you're going to do. We thank you in advance. This particular teacher thanks you for helping her to help and educate the children. Thank you, James.
All right. Take care, and we'll see you at 8 o'clock.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.